You are listening to the oneofus.net podcast network.
We're finally doing it now, John. It's been weeks. We've been playing this epic-sized RPG since, what, probably March?
Yeah, March of 2017, 2015, yeah. One of those days.
So long ago. So long ago. And here we are, you know, having finally played Mass Effect Andromeda, my most anticipated game in years, John. I was so excited to play this game.
And you know me.
Yeah, I know. It well, was... you've had limited Mass Effect experience. Yeah, you played the first one. You'll play a little bit of two, which you're pretty positive about that
experience. I'm really hyped, actually, to get more into two.
Yeah.
Because the instant that game starts off, I'm like, ooh, this is good.
It's a good palate cleanser. And
this one.
Yeah. I mean, let's – but here's the thing. We're not the only people here today, John,
oh, yeah,
talking about this game. Of course, we have Nick Dyes of Unapologetic Geek Out – podcast. Nick, how are you doing today, sir?
Hey, that's me. Oh, I'm super excited. I actually, you know, I'm not only a guest on the podcast, I'm a fan of the podcast, so I'm super excited. Although, as a fan, now I'm actually disappointed that you lowered your standards enough for having me on. So it's a little weird.
Well, we felt that we had to. I mean, we've been guests on your podcast so many times. It's just like we gotta get this Nick kid.
Yeah, we actually had just finished up a review in progress a week or two back on Unapologetic Geek Out. So be sure to check that out as well. Early plug-in.
Of course, Nick is not the only person here, obviously. We have Justin Zarian, who has been on many reviews in the past. Justin, how are you doing today?
I'm Justin Zarian, and this is my favorite podcast on oneofus.net.
Oh, that's sweet, because it's a reference to a thing that Shepard says, and it just makes me wish that Shepard was in this game.
Well, he kind of is, once, at least. Reference.
Yeah, they talk about him, her, and it's just like, oh, yeah, I remember those better games.
Yeah, I can't believe that they go through the whole history of just like, hey, what's the background of Shepard's gender? Oh, okay, here's one line of dialogue that's relevant to.
I know. It's so disappointing. Among many disappointments, that is Mass Effect Andromeda, but there is some good stuff, and I figure we just kind of go into our initial thoughts about the game. Oh, by the way, this is We Are Air Reviews, one of us.net's premier video game review show.
Yeah.
But yeah, we just want to kind of jump right into our initial thoughts on the game. I'll say mine. It's just one of kind of universal disappointment to a certain extent. There are some things I like about the game. I like a number of the characters. There is some occasionally good world building. I like the combat. But we kind of when it comes right down to it, the game, for as big as it is, it just feels so empty. And it's populated with so many things that feel like hollow, whether it be kind of the quest line or kind of certain NPCs, the main threat in the game. It just kind of comes to this point where I was just kind of sick of playing the game, which is something that you never want. You never want that feeling when you're playing any game, but especially for me, being a fan of Mass Effect, being obsessed with this franchise for over, well, yeah, 10 years now at this point. So, I was kind of thoroughly disappointed by it in many ways. I mean, John, what about yourself?
It was funny because I kind of had the same sort of feeling I had when I started playing the first Mass Effect because I've been around you for...
I've been hyping it up.
Yeah, you've been hyping it up for since we started the show maybe 8, 9 months ago. Mm-hmm. And so when I finally get into it with Mass Effect 1, I was like, this is it. Okay. When I started Mass Effect Andromeda, from the very beginning, I was, one, with the character creation, I was just kind of like, this is it? That's all you're going to give me? Mm-hmm. Okay. Then the opening starts, and I'm like, this is it? Okay. Yeah. Like, I still try to keep an open mind, because, again, I don't come with any sort of baggage, really, towards the franchise, and particularly towards this. I was actually, more than anything, a little excited about this one in particular, because it felt more like a standalone thing. But yeah, from the jump, it was not what I would expect from something as big as Mass Effect. It felt like it lacked something from the jump. And I remember that initial first planet you explore, I'm just like walking and testing out the jump new jetpack, because I think that's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And then my feet get stuck, and just like I can't really move, and the character's model goes off frame, and then Liam, one of the side characters, stands in a just like one of those T poses,
yeah,
and just starts moving around me. And
he's just your super best friend, John. Yeah, and he just wants to be there with you.
And I was just like, huh, is this a Telltale game?
Yeah, I mean, there's a distinct lack of polish to the game. I mean, that immediately when that comes across with the character kind of facial expressions and their eyes, although BioWare did eventually patch this, and we are talking about this post-patch, obviously. Mm-hmm. Nick, what about yourself? What are your kind of like initial thoughts having finally completed the game?
Oh, well, I know we talked previously, the previous week about, our in-progress review, and my feelings have changed a little bit. I thought the ending was actually a little bit more promising than I thought it was going to be. In certain aspects, but we'll get to that. My initial lead up was, I was very tepid about this game from the beginning because ever since I heard it was going to be in a completely different galaxy with completely different characters and not referencing the Milky Way at all, I was like, that feels like a cheap move. Feels like you guys are just afraid to address the ending of Mass Effect 3 more than anything. And yeah, that kind of comes off, especially when it starts to talk about the Milky Way galaxy later in the game, where it's like, oh, shit went really wrong, but we don't really know what happened. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Maybe we'll tell you, maybe we won't. And I'm like, oh, God, stop it. Either just bend me over and fuck me, or stop this teasing bullshit. Beginning of the game, I'm going to say another shameless plug, we do Let's Plays on our YouTube video for the UGO podcast, and we had a strangely bug-free playthrough. We had very limited bugs. We didn't get the T-squares. Almost unsatisfying, because that would have been funny for a Let's Play. Like, that would have been really funny. And we missed almost all of that. Like, but we did end up getting... We met My Face is Tired Addison, and if anyone's listening to this and they haven't played the game yet, my suggestion would be to power through the story until you hit the Angara. Do not do any side quests, do not hang out with the Nexus until you are thoroughly engaged in the story, which only happens, like, maybe 6 hours in once you reach the Aya, I believe it is, the Angaran home planet. Because then it'll expand out, and you'll have more ability to go different places to pick and choose what side quests you're going to want to do, because honestly, you're not going to want to do all of them, because there's some boring shit to do in this game. On the flip, though, anything to do with the allies is still pretty strong. Like, the only ally that's really weak in the game is Korra, just because her storyline just decides to up and stop at a certain point. And let's face it, I was persecuted because I'm a biotic, and it has never really been a thing in this series. Like, they tried it with Kaden, but they dropped it really heavily. So it feels weird and out of place that she's, talking about, like, how people treat her differently. I don't see people treating you differently at all, but, she is a character that was raised by Asari Huntress, completely raised in a different culture. How are you not interesting? Like, how did they manage to write you in a way where I do not care if you die on this mission?
She's got a great ass, though.
Oh, and great hair. Great hair.
Tumblr hair.
Mm-hmm. I would say that hair, I would put the hashtag on it, surprisingly straight? Okay. I was just like, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You'll hit on her with female rider, and it's like, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm not really into chicks. Like, really? With that haircut? Okay.
Oh, man, here we go. Let's get into the controversial stuff. This is why we do these reviews, John.
Yeah. I'll be the first to say that out there, but that's not her greatest sin. Her greatest sin is just being a boring character. It's interesting because Liam is actually the most interesting version of the boring soldier that we always get in these games. Like, Jacob, James Vega, and all those, and Caden, like, he's actually kind of up and a little more energetic, and I find his story mission, his loyalty mission, to actually be super fun. And Korra is, like, the least interesting version of the Miranda Ice Queen-type character. But there are other characters, like, I really like Drak, Vetra, and PB. Like, I feel like those characters are really cool. The only downside with them is just that this very much feels like the first game in a chapter of, like, three, like they were saying. So there's not a lot of big character resolution stuff in this game. There's not a whole lot of, like, really finishing off, like, arc structures. Like, your relationship with, like, I only romanced Vetra, but it kind of just cuts off at a certain point where, like, and I guess we're done with this. And that's where a lot of stuff in this game feels like, and we're done with this for now. And we're done with this for now. And it seems like it's hinging a lot on that second game. It seems pretty sure it's going to get. And I'm a little bit doubtful. I wouldn't be surprised if we hit the Milky Way after this one. But I don't know. Again, the ending made me feel a little bit stronger about it. But overall, I'm still pretty tepid. This is an average game, and I was hoping for a great game. So a little disappointed.
Justin, what about yourself?
Well, I'll just preface this by saying that there's only one game series I'm truly a fanboy for, and it is Mass Effect. Like, I try to be very fair, very balanced when I approach things like this, but Mass Effect just has a special place in my heart ever since the first E3 trailer that I saw for it. Saying that, though, knowing a bit of the history about what went behind the scenes of this game before it came out, it measured my expectations, because, what's their names? The original producers and Casey Hudson left when they were developing this game, and so Mac Walters, the head writer from the last two games, took over as director, and they hired new writers. And I feel almost maybe 70% of the problems can be attributed to that, because Mac Walters clearly has a different vision for how he wants Mass Effect to go, because this one, more than any of the other Mass Effect games, feels very Star Trek. And in the sense, like, it's got that whole weird, like, kind of friendship is magic optimism to it. It's got a lot of the exploration. They clearly love the Mako from the old game, so they gave us the Nomad now, because it's better, because it's a different name. And then it seems like they kind of just assembled a bunch of other stuff from games they like. And it's weird, because when I played this game, first off, saying the first maybe 3 hours of the game, I was not enjoying myself. I felt that it was clunky writing, bad action, bad level design, and just freaking Cora. I hate freaking Cora. I cannot stand that character. And it's like you said, Nick, it's not just the way she's written. Whoever's voicing that character, I don't remember the actress's name, she needs to wake up when she says her lines, because she is just so bored talking through that character. It's insufferable. But I will say that after you actually get to the Nexus, like Nick says, power through the game, get to the Nexus, get to the Angara, the game does get better. It feels like they saved way too much of their best stuff for later in the game. Like, oh, well, we'll just, you know, space out our time with open world stuff, like collecting a 12 of this thingy to open this thingy, or going to meet this character and then traveling across the galaxy to meet this character. It's such an uneven bag, because there are great things about this game. Like you, Nick, I like the alien characters a lot more than the human characters. PB, I found that, I remember talking to Chris about this, I didn't think her character seemed very compelling from the trailers, but the more I started to play her and the more I started to get to know her and then romance her, I kind of found that she was the single best character of this whole game, and especially because the actress was really playing her well, Christine Lincoln. But just playing through the game myself, I'm just like, it's not bad, it's not great, it's got fun parts, but then it's got slow parts. I'm so conflicted by it, and even though I'm forgiving about a lot of this stuff, and I'm actually going through my second playthrough of the game right now, I still find myself going, I kind of wish these sections I didn't like didn't happen. And, Nick, to your point, too, the part that I hated the most was the fact that it felt so much like sequel bait. They felt so assured with their success that they're like, well, we'll answer why the Koreans aren't here in the next game, or answer what's with the Cardinal, and all this other nonsense we'll get into in just a little bit. So, yeah, it's fun. It's probably the best playing Mass Effect game in terms of actual combat, but it is a disappointment. It's the weakest Mass Effect game by far.
Which, I mean, that's kind of the thing that bothers me, is that I think we're all the same opinion, or maybe with the exception of John, because he hasn't just played those other games yet, but this is probably the weakest Mass Effect game that BioWare has produced. And I have a real big problem with that, especially after, you know, you complete the trilogy and you had some great successes and a few problems with that. But for the most part, I felt that those games were incredible. And then 5 years later, you expect, okay, well, now you know, like, all the right things to do. And so going forward with this new game, you'll be able to make those corrections while improving on all the great things that you accomplished with the original trilogy. And to see that they just, with the exception of the combat, which even in that, I have a distinct problem with the combat in one case. But with the exception of combat, everything else just feels like it's been downgraded. Particularly with just like the, you know, even though I like a lot of the characters, there's just weird things that prevent me from kind of feeling any type of emotional attachment to a lot of them. Like, for example, and this kind of deals with the quest structure as well, when I'm going on one of my kind of loyalty missions for a particular companion, it's always like separated across all these different worlds where I have to go to this location and then I have to wait. It's like, not like Mass Effect 2 where it was just the one mission and you do it like in 45 minutes or like an hour and a half, but it's just that mission. You're just spending time with that character, learning about their history and their story, and it's compelling. Even the weaker characters in Mass Effect 2, like Jacob, he has an awesome loyalty mission that made me actually care about him, you know, for that time that I was with him. Whereas with Andromeda, when I'm going on a loyalty quest and it's taking hours upon hours because it's just separated all across the Andromeda galaxy, it just I'm at that point where I just want to stop caring about it. And oh yeah, plus if anyone's curious, like a Mass Effect Andromeda takes place 600 years after the events of the original trilogy, where it follows the Andromeda Initiative, which is where all these different alien races, including humans, go on this like this, you know, 600-year journey to Andromeda to kind of repopulate, to colonize it, and kind of establish like a new home for all these species. And you play as either Scott or Sarah Ryder, who is the son or daughter of the Pathfinder, Alec Ryder, who apparently is this incredible everyman who can do anything he wants because he's a super soldier and he's a genius and he designs his AI. But yeah, it's
and he's Clancy Brown.
Yeah, and he's voiced by the great Clancy Brown, even though I don't think he was given the right material for that. But yeah, it's, in the end, you know, circumstances arise where depending on who you pick, whether it be Sarah or Scott, you become the Pathfinder and you lead this galactic kind of expedition to colonize a new home. And it's just like, that's a cool concept. Yeah, it's very Star Trek-y. And that's interesting. But it's just actually doing all those things, being the Pathfinder, whether it be talking with your companions, going on their quests, or kind of exploring the galaxy. Everything about that just feels hollow and just, it's just not where it needs to be. It's like, it becomes a chore and it's annoying. I think that's the biggest thing about the game, really. For me, it's a chore. Whether it be, you know, the companion side quest, the main missions, well, not so much the main missions, I think those are okay. But like the other like side quests where I'm scanning like a million different things, the crafting where there's weird things in place where I need to rack up these ability points where in order to then create a weapon, it's just like I need these Andromeda points and I need the Milky Way. It's like what is this? And then even with the what the hell is it? Oh, the combat. Like, even though I like it for the most part, it's very vertical, a lot of movability. The problem is that the cover system is just totally wonky and weird, where I don't even know if I'm in cover half the time. It's just like, guys, Gears of War perfected it. It's okay to steal from Gears of War. That snap to the cover is great. Don't change it. It works. And that's why the Mass Effect series eventually, did that with 2 and 3 especially. So yeah, it's just everything that seems to be in place that where I was enjoying the game, there's always something there that gets in the way that ruins my enjoyment, and where I was just kind of bored and tired of it after a while. I mean, John, you know, anything that I just said, did you feel?
No, yeah. It's funny because when we did the review in progress at UGO, I feel like I was really positive on the game, or at least more than a lot of you guys were at the time. And Nick just mentioned, like, do get to the Angara and then start doing side missions. Like, it's much better if you just truck through and get to that stuff. And that, I realized that's how I had played. Mm-hmm. I had gotten, like, all the way up to the second to last mission, I think, story-wise. And then I was like, oh yeah, I should explore these characters, particularly Drak and Peepee, because from the jump, they are kind of, like, brighter. PB's, I don't know, she just has an attitude and Drak is just grumpy and they just kind of shine better than Korra or Liam or, again, I can't even remember the other ones off the top. Vetra? Yeah.
I like her.
But so they just like pop off a lot more than the others. And so I was like, oh, okay, I want to explore them. But then that thing comes up it's, I got to go here. And then I have to watch 7 cutscenes to get to the second planet. And I mean, not cutscenes of story. I mean, transitional cutscenes of going in and out of systems. You go have one conversation. Let's do it again. One conversation. Let's do it again. And it became a chore.
Yeah.
Where to the point was like, I just don't want to anymore. And I think, you know, as we try and truck through as many games as we can so that we can record them, it is a little higher likelihood that games start to feel a little like a chore. Mm-hmm. But this one in particular, there are interesting things about it that I do want to explore. Like the writer's family secret mission, I really wanted to take the time to like figure that out. I thought it was interesting. I wanted to know what had gone on, the in-between pieces. But it scatters those little memory glitches throughout the planets, and there's nothing in those planets. They're barren wastelands filled with just sand or snow, depending on what planet you're on. And it's like, if you had not made such a big world, because these are just the planets on which the, like, story-driven missions are. There are a bunch of other planets that I didn't even like bother to even find out what its name was, because I was like, I'm not going there. I'm not going to deal with all these other side missions because you're barely keeping me on track with the ally missions. And it's just like, to me, I think there's too much going on. Again, with the point system, like you said, it's like, I don't know what points do what. And like at some point, it doesn't matter anymore to me.
Because yeah, just the crafting stuff.
I eventually found a shotgun that could kill most enemies in two hits. And I was like, okay. And we're talking about combat. As someone who isn't RPG first, like, I like my action RPGs, action heavy. That cover system is garbage. Can we, like you said, let's just use Gears of War because they got it perfect. And just, there you go. Like, just leave it at that. Like, I do, it has this cool blink system, or I guess initially it's like a jetpack system.
Yeah.
And I do like that. But that mixed with the cover system is awful to me. And it made a lot of the combat segments just at times. I found myself dying because I apparently was not behind cover when I thought I was, or he wouldn't automatically snap. Yeah. And it's just, I don't have that level of interaction that I felt like I should in these combat missions. And I don't know. It's just, it started to feel like a chore. And I'm really glad we're reviewing it now because that means I can play something else.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you. Nick, kind of what was your opinion on the combat and kind of the game, certain gameplay elements, and I guess the quest structure as well?
I'm going to play devil's advocate here with the cover system, because at first I was like, what is this cover system and why is it here like this? But then when you mix in the jump jet and you mix in the maneuverability, the hover system, the game wants you to play more move, like almost to the point where, yeah, you might want to take cover every once in a while, like to get your shields back, but it always wants you to move. So I feel like if you were to give that snap cover, I don't know if it would actually be better because enemies outflank you so often because the structure of the, because we're in this open world, they can't create a battle arena like they did in 2 and 3 where it's much more linear. So I think that the choice to use the cover system, I can actually understand and I can actually get behind it. And I actually got used to it after a while. That being said, the multiplayer makes the multiplayer almost unplayable. It's, or at least for me, and I really liked the Mass Effect 3's multiplayer, and with that cover system the way it is a chore to play, even with a good team of people working in coordination, because you're all constantly jump jetting all over the place. There's no coordination. You can't, like, coordinate a specific strategy when everyone's flying all over the map everywhere. To bring up another point about the combat, did anyone here use consumables, like, at all?
Like,
never. No.
Never. And BioWare has always done that. Like, they have a thing in a game that I never end up using. In Dragon Age, in Dragon Age Origins, it was, like, the poisons and, like, and the crap. In Inquisition, it was, like, the fucking other potions or, like, the thing, the lightning coating or whatever the fuck it was. Like they seem to have some sort of, like, they're trying to figure out, like, oh, well, we need to have some sort of consumable currency thing in our game. And it's like, I never end up using any of these because I'll make a character to a point where I don't need to use those. And, like, I'm not going to use the Cobra RPG on a boss and just, like, get it done and get it done in a minute. That defeats the purpose of this combat. As far as the rest of the gameplay, traversing around on the Nomad is actually a lot better than the Mako, because it almost has to be. The different traction you can get with it, and you can upgrade it later, it actually gives you, like, oh, this is a pretty functional way to move around the map. To be perfectly honest, I'd still rather have just a teleport system or a shuttle system, because it's like they give you a weak ass reason, like, oh, with these winds, you shouldn't use a shuttle, you should use the Nomad. And then you see shit tons of shuttles all the time in the game. I'm like, okay, so they get shuttles, but I get this fucking car. And no one else is driving a fucking car, but they get shuttles. Because the designers decided that, oh, well, people loved the exploration from the first game and the car. And I'm like, that's the one thing we all hated from the first game.
Yeah.
Like, we all rejoiced that you got rid of that and focused on linear action and storytelling in 2 and 3. So why did you go back to where, cause you're the BioWare games, all of them, go on this fine edge blade where they're balancing, we are just action-y enough to get people that aren't really RPG players, like John and myself, and then we have enough options and, you know, skill trees and customization to pull in the RPG people. It's kind of like this best of both worlds thing. And this game has erred on the side of RPG, doldrums and busy work. And that sort of structure, and it's like probably the farthest for any BioWare game I've seen, at least any modern one that I've seen at this point. So for me, it's not only just not very well designed and very, you know, not very well polished. It's just also not the type of game I want to play in a Mass Effect game. But that could just be a personal preference for me as well. That being said, I did like the final mission. I thought the final mission was actually structured pretty well, because it actually took in, decisions you already made, like, you know, the Angara help you out, the Pathfinders that you ended up hooking up with, they actually end up, you know, giving you support, and it does feel kind of like the, oh yeah, let's get them, let's kick the shit out of them. And I was surprised how invested I was for an enemy that I did not care about, and with allies that are like, we're very new and, you know, kind of shitty within themselves. But, I was actually really, it actually jazzed me up. And the fact that, you know, we find Meridian and how that ends up with the arc. And I'm like, yeah, I can kind of see where this game might go in the future sequels. So I was surprised in how engaged I was by that.
Justin, what about yourself? What did you think of kind of like the combat and the gameplay and the quest structure?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of more on Nick's side here about the combat, because I actually found that adding the jump jet was probably the single best design decision they made in the whole game, and that influenced what Nick was saying about the cover system and the constant dodging combat style, where it's like you always have to be moving, because these guys, for as bland as the Kett are as actual villains in the story, they're at least dynamic enough that they put up a challenge, at least until you level up to a certain point, and then you just kill everything in sight, because now you're God. But it really is one of those things which is like, I felt like I had fun actually shooting. Like, anytime the game actually puts you into combat, I felt like that's when the game was at its strongest gameplay-wise. But it's like Nick says, it's like, it feels like they were overly ambitious with trying to create all these different open-world quest and combat styles. And I'm going to say this, too. Like, you guys complain about the research points and that stuff. BioWare, I've played every single game that you've been making up to this point. Nobody wants to use your money. Nobody cares about credits. Nobody buys anything at your stupid stores. Seriously, like, I got to the point where I would just collect weapons off of enemies that I'd killed, and I never needed to actually research anything. I never needed to actually buy a weapon in the store. I just go, oh yeah, that's cute. Hey, that anointed over there just dropped a giant, like, Avenger X. I'm gonna pick that up and use it. So, and that's how I kind of felt with a lot of the stuff here, where it felt like they were kind of lazy with the way they designed some of the gameplay stuff. Like, you talked about the conversations. Sometimes you get cutscenes when they actually cared about the mission they were designing, and sometimes it would just, the camera would pan forward into this weird, awkward conversation animation. And with all the technical problems, there was one point I went to talk to Jahl at the cultural center in the Nexus, and that conversation could have been interesting if Ryder's neck didn't turn neck exorcist style when he was trying to talk to him. So he's like, hey, Jahl, way back here, kind of thing. It was distracting beyond belief. And that just showed that, like, they really didn't care about those parts, which is, it's just frustrating, because, and they make you just do so many gosh dang fetch quests. And it's like you said, it's the way they pace them out that's awkward, because you're not just doing, like, big chunks of gameplay every now and then. Sometimes it's just, hey, I went to this planet and I scanned for a signal. Oh, the signal wasn't there. I guess I'll have to wait until I unlock a next key mission, and then I can go pursue this quest later, I guess. it felt bizarre. It was just confusing. And like you said, it robbed you of investing in these characters and stories, because at least when you actually get to talk to these people, they're interesting people. But then we just have to play the game, and you kind of just like, well, I want to fast forward to these parts that I don't care about. And I'm maybe sounding more negative than I actually am about the game, but it just all these problems come to the surface just talking to other people about it, you know?
Yeah. No, I get that. I mean, you are right about that. You know, we bring out the worst in each other, I suppose. But one positive thing I actually did want to bring up, because I just remembered right now, I actually love the skill system in this and how you can upgrade your character and how you can play around with that upgrade system where I can put all my abilities into combat or engineering or tech, actually, and then biotics. Or you can mix and match and create all these kind of like different play styles for different kind of combat scenarios. So if you're fighting against shielded enemies, for instance, I'm going to invest all my stuff in the tech power so I can take down their shields. I'll drain them of their health. Or if I'm going up like against biotic enemies or whatever, I'm going to switch to biotics too, so then I can fight against their type of abilities and use lift or singularity and kind of disrupt the battlefield. That's really interesting. I actually like that they expanded upon that, because in last games, in the last kind of two Mass Effects, well, those. They had a skill system. It was just kind of there, like, you're going to eventually unlock all the skills for yourself. You might miss one, but it's like, it doesn't matter. No one cares about that one anyway. No,
and I like the fact that there's no level cap for the skills either. Like, you can just level up and get all the points. I thought that was actually kind of refreshing.
Yeah, there's a lot of great RPG statistics. I'm like, ooh, if I do this, I get 50% carry weight, and so I can get the super big shotgun, and my powers will recharge faster. It's like, oh, that's good. That's a little bit of RPG that BioWare got right.
So they make it really easy to respec if you fuck up too. Like at any point you can just respec and like, this character isn't working for me. I'm going to try something new, which is something I appreciate.
Yeah, just go visit Marjorie Tyrell and she'll fix you up down in the medical bay.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of wanted to touch on that. I mean, probably my favorite part of the game, honestly, is just when I'm on my ship and like talking to all the companions. It's not when I'm going out there and doing their quests, which are all just structured in a weird way. I just liked the conversations, and it's like learning about PB and her various problems and Drax's history. I mean, he's like the oldest Krogan, I think, in the history of Mass Effect. Yeah, I think he's over 1600 years old or something like that. It's ridiculous.
So, yeah.
And then like getting to know Vetra, and then even Liam, I'll admit he probably has one of the better loyalty quests, because it's funny and it really works. And I get a sense of camaraderie between my rider and him. And yeah, even though he's being a little too friendly when I first meet him, he's like, hey, buddy, let's go get a drink. It's like, I just met you and my dad just died like an hour ago. Let's give me some time to cope with that, right? But I did like those kind of quieter moments where the game slowed down, where I wasn't out there scanning an infinite amount of materials or whatever the hell I was told to do. I was just like, just conversating with all these people, and I appreciated that. I mean, John, did you want to like touch any particular characters that stood out to you or that you had a great interaction with?
Real quick, I did want to counteract what they were saying about the cover system.
Sure.
Not to start a huge argument.
Disagree.
I think what they were saying.
Because we're wrong.
What they were saying made sense. I understood the point of view that they were coming from. But at the same time, I don't think the other way around would have hurt what they were saying. When I think about like snap cover system, you have to trigger that. Yeah. You have to hit A when you're near the thing to trigger it. So like this sort of flow into the cover can mess up the fluidity more than I think the snap could, because I am bouncing everywhere. And mm-hmm. if I bounce too close to a thing and I start moving and then I just slide right in, it's just like, I don't want to be right here right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to make the deliberate choice. That was just something I was thinking of. But the tech trees, a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I think that fluidity works a lot better because they don't box you in any way. If anything, the class system molds to you. This to me feels the most. Like, I know developers always say, you build your own class. Like, it'll mold to you. This more feels like those profiles that they built. Mm. They're just like, they aren't really important, the profiles part. I never really paid attention to what profile was exactly.
I forgot.
Yeah. It was more about what the, like, three things I chose to invest in. And, and after that, you're just like, I think it allows for more testing. You're like, this sounds like a neat trick. Let me, you know, put points towards it. Do I like it? Mm-hmm. I invest more in that. And mm-hmm. if I don't like it, then, well, there's seven other things from that sort of field that I can. And even I kind of just stuck with, you know, like energy drains, because I always like energy drains. A real close range force push thing, like the Nova.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
And just a grenade, just like a standard grenade. Mm-hmm. And that's just like how I played. One was like a defensive sort of thing, and the other two were a short range and long range sort of explosion. And I could have tried anything else, and I felt that kind of freedom to do that and explore. And I think that just worked really well. So I just wanted to, you know, side with you on that as well. But when it comes to characters, I think it does make that also really easy to explore. Mm-hmm. It's the layout of the ship, I think, is much better. They're all kind of always in their own zone, and it just made more sense to me. I remember when we talked about Mass Effect 1, I was just like, this ship, I don't quite. It doesn't tell you. The beginning of Mass Effect 1, I didn't know that's where people were. Mm-hmm. I had to go want to explore when so many loading things, I didn't want to dig around in that ship. Where in this case, it's just flat two levels, and they're all in their own rooms.
And there's no loading whatsoever.
Yeah, and I thought that was great. And it kind of reminds me of, it brings up the point about the story and how it does. To me, it felt like, whatever. Mm-hmm. I was kind of whatever. And when Nick said the Kett are weak characters and enemies, I think they are. As characters, they suck, I think. But what they bring up as a topic is interesting. This idea of, well, what is creation and where I come from, how impactful that is. I think I had a good conversation with Jaw right after the Kett. He finds out what they are.
Yeah.
And he just kind of has this existential mini crisis of kind of going through the motions of, what does this mean for my existence? Mm-hmm. One character I really loved, was Susie, the other pilot.
Yeah.
Because
Scottish pirate.
Yeah. I dug into her. I talked to her for a little bit and discovered she's a woman of faith. Mm-hmm. So I was like, that's really interesting to me as someone of faith. It's just kind of when you do realize that there's other creations out there and maybe they're creating their own creations. It's what does that mean about mm-hmm. this larger thing? And I thought she had a really nuanced answer. One that I think most people wouldn't really think. Cause sometimes it's either we're the only things that exist. And if there are other things that exist, then what we believe in does not exist. Mm-hmm. She was just kind of if I'm supposed to believe in something that's this all being, why would I think he'd limit himself to just one thing? And I was just that's really interesting. I wish I could have dug into that conversation more, in that the game would have had explored this idea of creation more rather than writer's own fucking problems. After a while, it's just kind of I get it. You're unsure and this got pushed on you. But after a while, I'm just kind of I don't care too much about your indecision.
Yeah, because you're not very, you're not an interesting enough character.
Yeah, you're not an interesting enough character. Also, I will say the sister's not in the game very much.
Oh, and she sucks, by the way.
Or I guess in my playthrough, the sister.
Yeah,
the
other
character.
Sure.
I could have sworn they had said, oh, your sibling will be with you a lot. And it's very important. It's it doesn't come up until the third to last mission where you can actually have a full in-depth conversation. They're awake and I'm just kind of cool. You kind of lied to me straight up on that one.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. I will say
she'll be very important for those 10 minutes that she's in.
Yeah, I will say I think that whoever is doing the voice work for Sarah Ryder, it doesn't help that the dialogue's not that great that they give her, but she's awful. Because I did both a male writer and a female writer. I want to try out both and see what kind of their introductions are different. It's I couldn't stand her. And so I just delete her off my machine. It's nope. It's going to be male writer. Be all dick from now on. But actually, one thing before we go, Travis, I do want to mention, I really like Jaw as a character. I thought he was really interesting. The idea that the Angara are this really emotional species and how they deal with their emotions. It's I think one time Ryder asked him, what happens if you ever get too emotional, you're overcome by it. And he says, we deal with it. We act like adults, in regards to these kind of things. I was like, wow, that's kind of really mature and interesting. I like that he was so different. It's a type of reaction that we haven't seen, or just a mindset that we haven't seen in the previous Mass Effect games and the species that are introduced. The Angara, I thought, were a really nice addition to the Mass Effect universe, whereas the Kett were just so boring. I'm just I don't care that you come from all these different races and you're using your Java juice or whatever the hell it is, you're sticking into yourselves and you become Kett. I don't care. The Archon, you suck. You look like a monkey bone gorilla. I don't like you. But yeah, I think Jaw was probably a big standout for me, and then of course Drac and Vetra and Blue Shrek as well. Travis, what about
Nick,
yourself, sir?
Nick.
Excuse me, Nick. Yeah, yeah.
No, Travis, the flaky one. I actually showed up.
Yeah, I know.
Come on, get it right. It's Nick.
Yeah, sorry, I apologize about that. Yeah.
But yeah, for me, I'm also a play devil's advocate for the female writer character. I don't think the voice acting was super bad. And I think that some of the dialogue was actually pretty funny. Like, me and Travis now have a new inside joke where we just, like, scan them back during the one mission where it's like, they're scanning us. I thought I did like her being different than a lot of other BioWare protagonists, where it's like, oh, she's actually underqualified to be the leader. Like, she knows it, and it was interesting to find her way to have the crew respect her, because the crew actually just don't know, like, well, we just don't know what to think of you, because you're just this unknown quantity, rather than everyone loving you, like, right away, pulling a Liam, and just everyone wanting to give you a blowjob right away. But... I like Jahl. Jahl is like is likable Javik, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he is.
That's a good way of comparing him. Yeah,
and you know, I think Vetra adds a lot of weight to where she is like one of the only characters you feel is invested in this mission succeeding because of her sister, and that like really comes off into her thing. And there's small moments with all these characters that are like, this is the BioWare that I remember. Like, there's moments like, you know, telling your sibling in the coma that your dad's dead and he goes into like a heart attack and you go, oh shit, what did I just do? There's, you know, moments where, like, Vetra cooks you a steak and it comes out completely wrong and you gotta play it like, oh, this is awesome. And she gets really sad because that's how she portrays caring for people, is that she takes care of people. That's how she portrayed love to her sister, and that's how she portrays love to you if you're in the relationship. So I'm like, okay, this is smart. Some of the same writers are here, but then, you know, they'll do weird stuff with, like, the other characters. And let me ask you guys this before we get out of here. Do you guys think that how heavy did the voice actor's strike affect this game, do you think?
I think it was just bad directing on the casting agent or whoever was in charge of it all. Because, like, it felt like they were acting really well, but they weren't always aware of what the line was before they read their line. So, like, it was, like, really mismatched emotionally.
Well, I think that the core group, definitely they seemed to cast the core group pretty well, except for, like, Korra. And the Nexus, everyone on the Nexus seems like they just got whoever was in the studio, like, at the time.
And Camille Nanjiani.
Like, whoever's you cleaned up the waste bin. We got a director for you to voice. Come on. Your face doesn't look that tired. Let's get over here. And that's a real point, is that's the hub of the game, and that's where the voice acting is, like, the worst. But yeah, as far as the character stuff is pretty, it's I would say it's on point with Mass Effect 1, because you don't, like, people don't remember that for Mass Effect 1, you don't get a lot of resolution on characters until Mass Effect 2 or 3 for a lot of those people. I mean, even in 2, you get, like, the one recruitment mission and one loyalty mission with each character, and then you're done. And in this one, you actually get more time with these characters, but I think that they mismanage that time to a point where it comes off like, it's not that you don't like it, it's just that the fact that in the back of your mind, you go, this could be a lot better. And that never quite leaves your mind, I think, is the problem.
Justin, what about yourself? What were some, like, favorite character moments or anyone that kind of stood out to you?
Well, I mean, a lot of what Nick said is right. Like, and actually, I'm kind of inside, too, in the fact that I don't dislike the writers in terms of acting. Like, I actually think the male writer is a better actor in comparison, and I found him actually to be one of the more likable characters. Like, of everybody who's been, you know, the BioWare faceless protagonist, he has the most dynamic range to him. Like, nothing that male Shepard ever could have matched, because, you know, every line he does was so flat. But anyways.
No offense, Mark Meer.
I love that guy. Right tone of voice, not the greatest delivery. But I actually felt that I liked a lot of the characters once I started to get to know them better, because for some reason, this game has a really weird way of introducing characters, where they try to give them, like, these big, showy moments, and they almost always fall flat. Like, when Korra reveals they're like, I'm a biotic, kind of thing. It's just like, okay, well, that was underwhelming. But the more you actually talk to her, like, what was written for Korra could have been compelling if not for the way she was delivering the lines. But, like, you know, getting to know Vetra was cool, because she was probably the most, like you said, she was the most interested and most invested in the mission, and it made her feel more natural. Jahl, I mean, for being one of many Australian Twi'leks, like, in this game, he's interesting. I mean, I never found myself really believing the whole emotional alien thing, because they're not terribly emotional for the most part, I found. Like, where they're very controlled and very reserved, and then occasionally they'll cry. But, yeah, I mean, I didn't really buy the whole, like, N'Garu are very emotional people kind of thing. But he's fine. Liam, you know, he's your buddy, and he's just a buddy character. You know, he's fine. I guess he's supposed to be British, but he has an even thicker accent than I would have imagined, which is just odd a little bit. And then Vetra's fine. Drac is old Rex, but being old Rex, he's good. And PB, I mean, mm-hmm. I really attached to her because I found that she had the most dynamic personality of the companion characters. And actually, I think I preferred her loyalty mission the best, because at least it involves something more personal, more emotional investment on it, for at least in my opinion. Actually, the guy who I found to be the most interesting for, like, personal character side quest was Gil, funny enough. Also voiced by Renly Baratheon from Game of Thrones.
Oh, really? Wow, I didn't know that. Huh.
Oh, yeah, no, I went all depth. I looked up these actors. But there's a really cool thing where if you don't romance him, you know, the homosexual romance option, he has this interesting arc with this platonic best friend that he has, who's a woman, and it really goes in some directions that you don't expect. You're just like, oh, hey, that was surprisingly touching the way it was handled.
Well, yeah, I really did like that. Thanks for reminding me. I completely forgot, but that was actually a really nuanced relationship between him and his platonic friend and her concern of wanting to have a child. I thought that was a really interesting thing that I've never seen in a game before. So, yeah, very good point.
Yeah, and, you know, it was a way of Bioware showing that they were presenting themselves very fairly. Like, the fact that they were presenting, you know, homosexual stuff that wasn't in your face one way or the other about its portrayals, religious stuff that wasn't in your face one way or the other. You know, it was a very well-thought-out world on the surface. And even some of the side characters, I agree with Nick, there's some weird kind of like casual acting kind of thing going on. And again, like I said, Camille Nanjiani, you're not fooling anybody. You're not a Salarian. I mean, I don't know what part of India Sarkesh is in, but it's definitely not you. But it was a little odd hearing him talk like that. But, and, you know, I'll say this too. I thought the acting was fine overall. The biggest problem with the Ket, and we've talked about how they're badly developed characters. The reason why they're badly developed characters is because they try to sell you too hard on them being evil from the get-go when they haven't done anything. Like, the only thing that we're supposed to know about them is that they're big, they're made of bone, and they murder people. And then you're supposed to get this feeling like, man, the Archon's such an arrogant prick. We hate him, right, guys? And I'm like, I wasn't aware we're supposed to hate him that much, but okay.
That makes a lot of sense, because I realized the opening of the game, they become bad guys because you come up on them and they're hesitant.
Yeah.
Like, because again, you are the alien in this entire game. So, like, I don't know. You don't know their past from the jump, and it's just kind of like, oh, they were scared of you, so they are the bad guy now.
And they just don't establish this kind of mythos around them like they did with, you know, comparing it to the original trilogy with the Reapers, where they build that up throughout the entire course of the first game, really all of the games, even in 2, where it's just like, what are the Reapers? What's this mystery? It's connected to the Geth, who are they under their control? What's Saren's connection with them? Like, they build it up over time, and just from the start, like you said, Justin, where it's like, yeah, the Ket are bad guys, and you're going to fight them, and that's it. And we everyone hates them, because everyone tells you that we all hate them. Because I guess...
Well, and it doesn't help...
No, go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, it doesn't help either that, one, the Ket are essentially the Zerg. Like, they just assimilate species, they take their traits and turn them into monstrosities. That's pretty much their defining characteristic. Two, the Archon is the Didact from Halo 4, because he's exactly the same type of character.
Oh my god, you're right.
Yeah, he's the exact same bland, like, I am evil because my race is evil, so therefore I will be religious and evil at the same time. And three, the Cardinal, the Lieutenant Commander, whoever, for the Archon and such... That character in the one scene they actually talk to you face-to-face, well, two actually, is way more interesting a villain than the Archon ever was, because they at least have range dynamics, and they clearly hint that that'll be the bad guy for the next game. But it made me just wish, like, it made me just realize how thinly written the Archon is, because by the time I fought the final mission, it was a fine mission, like Nick says, but it was such an anticlimactic defeat for the Archon, where I'm like, oh, there's no real... boss fight. I just fight us round, you know, wave after wave of the same bad guys, and I don't even fight the giant architect in the middle of the room, and he just dies. So, Yay.
There's no narrative climax with the Archon, as in, you know, when you look at kind of the past game, specifically with kind of like Saren and Mass Effect 1 and that ending. He's like, yeah, you fight him multiple times, you know, and kind of the last third of the game, but it's those conversations you have with him, this relationship that you built up with him over time, even though he's not always on screen. You see the effects that he's had on all these different people, and where they try to sell with the Ket and with the Archon, it just feels hollow.
Yeah,
you know, it's just you know, it just doesn't work.
If I could jump in here too, the Ket. First of all, Justin, if you keep agreeing with me, I think we got to go for a beer at some point and make out, because I really like that. But also the Ket. BioWare has this very weird trend of, if they don't get something right in the previous game, they try and do it over and get it right. See, like, when people didn't like Justice from Dragon Age 2, they made Cole in Dragon Age Inquisition. And they always have these apology-type things. And I think this one, they were kind of like, okay, collectors weren't really interesting in Mass Effect 2, so let's try and give them a hook and make them more interesting.
Oh, yeah.
And this time it kind of fell flat on its face. But the Archon.
I love the collectors, by the way.
I think the collectors get more interesting once you realize that they're Protheans, and it's like, oh shit, now I have investment. And then the Archon is another BioWare trope where they introduce a bad guy, and you're supposed to have this deep investment with him, except that you don't see them all that much. And it's only ever really been pulled off with Saren, because Saren, the little time he's on, he holds your attention, he has gravitas, he has a mission, you understand where he's coming from. The Archon never has that. He spouts generic lines after, I can't tell you anything he said, like any line at all.
I am the Archon. Because there you go, that's all you need to know.
I think he said that
multiple times.
He might have. I don't know. I can't remember. But they had the same problem with Corypheus in Dragon Inquisition, where it's like, and he had a great introduction, and you're like, whoa, and then you never see him until like the end of the game, and you kind of go, oh yeah, this guy, and you just, with the pacing of these games, like especially with how long you spend in between missions, you can't go that long with this bad guy where he's not affecting you during the game. He's not affecting you at all. So I think that's a thing that they've always struggled with, and I think they'll continue to struggle with as long as they don't change up the pacing of their mission structure.
I found that Sloane Kelly was a better villain personally. Like, when you go on Kadara, like that whole conflict between her and the Charlatan was way more interesting than anything with the Archon.
Because you got to spend time with her. That's the thing. Yeah, I mean, when you're actually spending time with the character, or you're seeing the effects that they're having, and it's not just people telling you how bad they are. It's just like, oh, okay. I mean, that's what storytelling is supposed to be. I mean, that's what BioWare is supposed to excel at. And I guess, yeah, kind of just to go into my final thoughts of the game in general, I mean, for everything that, yeah, there were those moments that I was like, I really like this. Like, I forget, was it you, Nick, or Justin, you brought up the fact that, like, Vetra, she cooks this steak for you and she completely messes it up. Yeah, and it's just a really kind of fun, cute moment. It's character building. I liked it. It was a very quiet scene. That's what it needed to be, and where she's kind of expressing her feelings towards you, pursued a romantic relationship with her. It's like, that's great. But then, you know, then you veer off where it's like, I have to go to all these multiple planets to experience your loyalty quest, and then that's frustrating. It's like with the combat, there's just like, I like the verticality of it. I like the skill system. That's cool. But then the cover system's not that great. And then when it comes to the crafting, there's always something in place that's just blocking my ability to create more powerful weapons or incorporating this useless kind of consumable resources. I'm just like, I'm never going to use this. It's like, for everything that the game does right, it does like two things wrong. And it's just, I'm at a point where it's just like, it shouldn't be like this. After 5 years of development, after looking at three previous games, you know, successful games, it's just like, I don't understand why this is the final product. And it's just frustrating and disappointing for me as a lifelong Mass Effect fan. And I'm at this point, I really hope that if they were to continue the franchise, that Andromeda will be a spinoff, and they'll kind of get back to, you know, basics with what they did with the original trilogy, where they're not going to expand out. Because I think that's a mistake. BioWare's, they're good at creating worlds, but they're bad at creating open worlds. And it's just like, just tell a really compelling story, fill it with really interesting characters, and expand upon those characters. Give them these different quests where I can get to know them, but don't have it where I have to travel, like, countless, you know, hours out of my way, and then I just get distracted and bored. It's like, There's a right way for BioWare to do this, and I think they just need to look back in their past, even like all the way back with like Knights of the Old Republic and those kind of worlds that they created that were just really compelling. And they didn't have to be big. They didn't have to be filled with all these fetch quests and this content that just frankly doesn't need to be there. I would have preferred 25 meaty side quests over the 200 side quests that they have in this game. It's just less is more in this case, and I hope BioWare takes that to heart. So, for me, I'd probably just give this 6.5 very tired faces. John?
He stole it! He stole the rating! Damn you!
Someone was going to
get off the bat. I was going to get in there with it.
I have to reiterate what you said. I think the key to BioWare moving forward is narrow your scope. You had mentioned off mic a couple days ago about the Polygon. I think it was Polygon.
It's a Polygon
write up about BioWare needs to stop making open worlds. While we've been talking about this, I have been thinking about that. The problem with Mass Effect 1 for me was I did like Saren, but I don't get to spend enough time with him. I feel like there's so many distractions early on in the game that they want you to deal with that it's like the last three missions when you finally get to talk to him, you're like, oh my gosh, this guy is interesting, and then the game's over. It's kind of like, felt like that should have been the whole thing, at least for me. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of interesting things going on in this game with like the Susie and the Faith thing, or the Gil and that relationship, or PB wanting to explore, Drak feeling old and he cares about his granddaughter. It's like, let's narrow it down. I don't know, focus your scope on something about like this idea of what is life. Like, I think that's an interesting concept and gives you a point to going on to this new galaxy, yeah. Which I don't want them necessarily to go back to the Milky Way and kind of deal with that. I think going into this new galaxy and having told a story about, stepping into your father's footsteps, or just, again, what is life? Like, what does it mean to be a living being with a soul? Like, who decides that? I think that's an interesting topic to explore. And just if you narrow that focus down and just concentrate on the writing aspect and don't think we have to fill this game with 800 side missions and 80 different worlds that no one gives a shit to explore. Like, don't waste your time on that stuff. It's not necessary. And I think it hurts more that there are better open world games out right now.
Yep.
Breath of the Wild and Horizon Zero Dawn. Persona 5 just came out. It's not open world, but it is a meaty RPG. And a game that's been reoccurring in my mind that I'm like, I know it's not the same genre per se, and I know you don't like it.
Ooh.
But I'd rather play Final Fantasy again because it is
15. You're talking
15,
about.
Yeah, because sure. It is more that idea of just like it's about a group. It's got a very narrow focus. Changed the last like two chapters, but it has a very narrow focus. All that other stuff is just like content you can explore, but it doesn't care if you do. And I think that is the direction I'd be cool with this era of Mass Effect going in, is like smaller linear stories. Like, that's what I thought Andromeda was going to be. This smaller, tight-knit sort of tale that they wanted to tell in this new universe. And if that's, let's get a Mass Effect insert new galaxy name, or I don't care. Like, just do that and don't fill it with this
crap.
Yeah, just crap.
Yep.
But again, it's like, there are things about it gameplay-wise that I do like, the skill trees and all that's right. I don't care for the combat necessarily as an action heavy gamer. But I also didn't come to it with expectations like you guys did either. So I kind of just took it as it was and I let it slide. But it definitely doesn't feel like coming from a AAA top tier developer like BioWare. I know you've expressed these worries, but like, this kind of hurts that name.
Oh, I think it tarnishes the brand.
And then with EA, their sci-fi focus now, I really think, is just Star Wars. Yep. And like, their money possibly is better invested in just that known IP, because it's going to sell big. And so, like, I don't know what this means for Mass Effect. But all in all, I think it's fine. It's like whatever. But it's not worth your time. It's crazy that we have the hottest first few months in, I think, gaming history. This is the best first half of the year so far.
Yeah, of this generation.
Of this generation, for sure. And I honestly think of the past two. It's hot. It's a hot 2017, and Mass Effect is it's going to suffer even more.
It's a dud.
Yeah. So I have to give it 6 out of 10 blue Shrek butts.
I mean, PB, I'm sorry. PB looks like blue Shrek. I mean, I'm going to put that out there. They're absolutely right about that. now, Nick, what about what's your kind of final thoughts on the games?
Oh,
on the game?
Well, I got to pretty much agree with almost everything you guys said. Let's see if I can say something that without repeating too much. But I think to Chris's point, what you said about them being great at creating worlds but not open worlds, I want to put that on a T-shirt because that is rings so true to me. The fact that they were willing to jettison the Milky Way galaxy, which, let's be honest, all they had to do was rewrite that ending. Everyone would have kind of gone with it. It's not like it would have been a big controversy. It would just been like, okay, this happened instead. And then we could have dealt with stuff like, what do the Quarians and the Geth do now that they're working together? How are the Krogan interacting with this galaxy when they have this ambassadorship? How is Arya dealing with the new post-destroyed Omega? There are things that they could have built on, which is normally their strong BioWare's strong suit is building upon what they've built before, and instead we scrap and we start from zero, and it's hard not to feel like we hit the brakes and now we're slowly gaining steam again, and it's really hard to not feel like we're climbing uphill. And as far as the general quality, I'm thinking that with BioWare, I think we're going to start to see, I hope I'm wrong, but I think we're going to start to see a post-Cars Pixar type thing where they're going to lose a little bit of their luster and if they keep putting out content like this. And I'd say that hopefully the next Mass Effect installment will be handled by Edmonton rather than Montreal, their B team. Have Montreal make a sequel for Jade Empire or whatever. I don't care. But seriously, if they made a sequel to Jade Empire, like, no one would have that much expectations and people would just be happy with anything. Cause it's like, oh, it's a new one. And that's what really hurts this game is the expectations, because I think if any other, developer had made it, it would probably get a higher score from me just because, like, wow, this feels pretty cool. I think I just gotta come down onto the fact that, like, it's not so much that I haven't been disappointed by a AAA game before. It hurts because it's BioWare and they're one of the few companies who has not done it to me. Arkham Knight, and their stupid DLC stuff, BioShock Infinite to a certain extent. Like, I've felt left down by a lot of AAA games lately, but BioWare was one of the ones that was the holdout. Like, no, they're still pure, and now they no longer are. They've been deflowered, if you will. But ultimately, I'm gonna have to give this game a 6 shitty compasses that there's no reason they couldn't be mini maps, but if some designers said, "Eh, fuck it, it's good enough," out of 10.
You just destroyed John. He was very adamant about putting in an actual mini map.
Sorry, I realized I went through the whole whole review without mentioning the mini map. And animation, dead eyes, whatever. That takes backseat. Mini map, number one priority. Patch that shit. Anyway, Justin.
You know, it's funny. Like, I feel like I'm way more positive about this game than you guys are, and I complain loudly too, just as much as you guys. But you know, after...
Well, we agree so much, Justin.
I know, but, you know, playing Mass Effect 3 and having so much good in that game and then the horrible, horrible ending happened, I kind of got the anger out of me. You know, like, that fueled my rage for years. Like, I literally could not eat. I was so upset the way that game ended for, like, the first day or two after it finished. But,
Play that Citadel DLC, Justin. It'll make you
happy.
That was worth it,
but it doesn't change the fact the ending sucked. But, and, you know, playing this game, all these problems are there. All these issues are there. All these things that we pointed out, that I pointed out. At the same time, when I play this game, it still feels very Mass Effect. It still feels like all the things I do like about the Mass Effect games. And yeah, the single best parts are, A, the subplots they clearly thought more time on. You know, the stuff with Kadara, the stuff with Aya, the stuff with, you know, your squad mates on the ship. That stuff was really good. And then B, too, I don't remember what I was talking about right now, but, the world building itself is still strong. Like, it feels like they've thought out a lot in this world. It just feels like they tried too hard to make it more mainstream at certain points, where it's like, anytime they're actually on the plot feels very by the numbers, science fiction, Star Trek-y kind of stuff. And it just, it never feels like it's terribly engaging. That being said, though, it still is well designed enough. It's still a decent game. It's not great. It's not going to be one of the BioWare's crowning achievements, but I don't think it's nearly as doomsaying as you guys say it is. It's going to be a dent in BioWare, just saying, okay, it's the Dragon Age 2 effect, where it's like, yeah, that wasn't our best, but the next one will be better. Because, and also, with your metaphor about post-Cars Pixar, they did make WALL-E, Up, Toy Story 3, and Inside Out after the first Cars movie, so. But,
And also Cars 2 and Planes.
They did not make Planes, but anyway.
I see your point.
Monsters University.
Yeah. Oh, Monsters University is good. You sure?
No, it's not.
Yeah, I don't hate Monsters University either. But, you know, it's a decent game. I actually think if you stick with it, it'll get more fun as it goes along. And I think that people did pick on it a little too hard when it first came out. It's like, look, yeah, it's not their best product, but it's not near the dumpster fires that other games have been. Because, I mean, it's just the Batman Arkham Knight effect. It just feels like they stretched out what was a decent amount of game with a bunch of filler to make it feel like a 40, 80-hour experience. So I'm going to say it'll be 7.5 out of 10 times my writer and PB fused together during the movie night subplot.
Oh, man. They got all Cronenberg together, didn't
oh,
they?
Oh, did you not see my photo I posted on Facebook where I just like, hey, did, BioWare, yeah. Check this out. It was the most horrifying thing I ever saw.
No, it's Brundle PB.
Yeah, it's Brundle PB. Brundle Rider PB, whatever the hell it is. Yeah, well, thank Justin, Nick, great to have you on. Always a pleasure. But I guess, you know, I guess we all should go.
This isn't goodbye. You have to believe we're not done yet.